Okay, good morning, everyone. We are starting something a bit different today, just for 2 weeks, for today and next week. I've called it the Personal Growth Seder. Seder, Pesach coming up, in case you haven't noticed. In case you forgot, just, you know. Now, the Seder is... So let me just tell you what I wanted to try and do today and next week. So the Seder, as we know, is probably the most kept Jewish experience. And so it should be, because it's for a good reason. Because it's the... really goes back to our foundation as a people. Yitziat Mitzrayim, the Exodus from Egypt, was really... when we became a nation. That's how we became a nation of Jews. We were taught that we were just descendants of similar people, but we weren't actually intrinsically connected in a unit and connected with God at the same time. And that's what happened. The prophet Yechezkel refers to the Exodus of Egypt as the birth of the Jewish nation. That, and of course later on the Sinai revelation. And then, of course, every single generation, we re-experience that concept every year around Pesach. We've talked about this many times. That we have this concept of Yitziat Mitzrayim, the Exodus from Egypt, being more of a spiritual thing, not just commemorating history, but being a thing where we actually re-experience it and we tap into the energy of personal redemption and personal going out of our own Egypt. That's it. So, how do we connect to it? How do we connect to the powerful energy of the Seder? So that's two things. One thing is obviously connecting with the rituals of the night, spiritually speaking also. We eat matzah, the shmur matzah, and we drink 4 cups of wine and so on. We say the Haggadah. That's how we connect into the whole experience properly and spiritually. But it also comes through preparation, and we need to understand, we need to know, we need to have depth and understand what it actually means, what some of the things mean, and what's the significance, how it applies to us, and so on and so forth. So, what I wanted to do is two things. Obviously, I want to talk about some of the amazing personal growth lessons from the Seder. Some of them we've done before, but we'll revisit them properly. And also, share with you some insights into the Seder. Do a little bit what we did. Remember we had that, I think it was a 4-week series where I took things and I asked you what the reason was, and you told me what you learned in way back in school, and then we upgraded a little bit, right? We called it upgrading our consciousness. So I don't think we did Pesach then, but we'll try and do a little bit with that as well. So that's what I want to do today and next week. So today we're going to focus more on the preparation, setting up the Seder, next week the actual Seder. So hopefully it'll add some depth and some meaning to your own Seder. Okay, so the first thing is the first concept. Right? Again, this is all about the theme of personal freedom. So freedom, just let's define freedom first of all. So freedom, we talk about the going out of our own Egypt and becoming free and tapping into the concept of freedom. So we know that freedom by Jewish definition is not free to do what we want. That's called slavery actually. When we give in to our own temptations and indulgences and weaknesses of personality and we say to people, just accept me the way I am and this is me and so on and so forth, that's prison. That's not freedom, right? That's being trapped and caught in our own inner prison. Whereas freedom means the freedom, the understanding, the ability we have to choose and to go beyond our natural personality and to grow and to do things because they're right and because they're healthy and because they're spiritually effective and they make us a better person and the world a better person and so on and so forth. So that's the concept of freedom, and we upgrade this every single year when we go out of our own personal Egypt, right? Now that has a number of stages. So we have the preparation for Pesach being as important as the Pesach itself, because what it is, it's the concept of letting go, preparing, right? Now what do we let go? So we know that we let go of chametz. Right, we clean the house or we get rid of the chametz and so on and so forth. So just to give you the little bit the understanding of it, the way we do it is by, well, we clean and we get rid of the chametz, because on Pesach we're not supposed to have chametz. Chametz is considered a very big problem on Pesach. Anything that is made out of the 5 grains, wheat, barley, rice, spelt, and oats, those are the 5 grains. and anything that's made out of them and has risen, that becomes what we call chametz, and that's something we're not supposed to eat on Pesach. Not only not supposed to eat, we're actually supposed to get rid of it, and we're supposed to, or we're not supposed to own it. And that's done different ways. One of the ways is like, you know, the places where we eat, we try and clean it and get rid of it. And if we're storing chametz, we try and not own it. The way that's done, incidentally, is because this developed over time as a mechanism how not to own chametz. If you're storing chametz, like, you know, like alcohols, a lot of alcohols are chametz and so on and so forth, like whiskeys are chametz and so on. So the way we do it is we sell it. It's a whole halachic mechanism. Different organizations do it. You can do it online with us as well. You fill out a form authorizing the rabbi to sell your chametz to a non-Jew, just so you get the picture of how it actually happens. So the non-Jew comes to my house on Erev Pesach, and we do a whole legal transaction. He gets all the forms, all your forms that you sign, and he gives it. It's a whole halachic mechanism of how he actually does it, that he can eat. It's actually a transfer of ownership. In theory, it's his, when it legally is his, when Pesach comes, and then he can come to anyone's house and take whatever he wants in terms of chametz, or whatever he takes, he's owed the balance, he's got to pay the balance. It's never happened to my knowledge, they actually don't come and do it. And then after Pesach, he comes to my house on Motzei Pesach, and we have a bit of a discussion. I say to him, well, let's finish the business, because you know you only gave a deposit, but now you have to finish paying, or if you're not interested in finish paying the balance, you can sell it back to us. Which normally agrees. And
rabbis
are
the same person every year that you use?
Not always, but I've used it, not the same person, because he knows the deal already. So mm-hmm. I use the, there's a maintenance guy at Keset Torah who I know. we just spoke last week, so I remember. Yeah. I normally make it, it's actually good for him as well. And he's very, very happy to help. He feels so good because he thinks, well, not thinks, he is. He's helping the Jewish community and he takes it very seriously. Plus, you know, I'll give him a gift and give extra money and so on. So it's always worth it well. But yeah, that's us down. So that's why he legally owns the chametz that we store away. And that chametz which we sell, we're supposed to put away so it's not accessible, like we put in a cupboard or in a room that we're not going into, whatever the case is, right? People do this actually with entire houses. People who go away for Pesach. Like last year, I went away for Pesach. I was in South Africa for Pesach, so we didn't clean. We didn't do anything. I didn't put anything away. Just locked up the house and put it on the form. I didn't do the sale last year. Someone else did it, but because I wasn't here. But so you can do it with anything as long as where the chametz is. Because the idea is that if you sell chametz, you have to put it away because it's not supposed to be freely accessible. Because then we make a mistake. We're confused since we do it all. You know, you come down the stairs and there's a box of Weet-Bix there, and it's on the table. And that's what you do every morning, then you might come to do it on Pesach too, so that's a problem. But that's why it's got to be put away. That's the idea. But it can still be in your house, just you can't own it. Yeah. Okay, but spiritually speaking, what is this concept? The concept is that we know, and we're going to go into it a bit more, that the difference between chametz and matzah is matzah represents humility, whereas chametz represents ego, because it rises, sense of an unhealthy sense of self, right? So we know that in order to go out of our own Egypt, in order to grow, in order to become free, to achieve inner freedom, we have to let go of ourselves and our own ego. Because the more we get trapped in ourselves, the more impossible it is to grow and to redeem ourselves, right? So therefore, step one is always to let go. And in fact, in the process, in the journey of personal growth, in the journey of inner freedom, letting go is the hardest part. You know, just to digress for a moment, we'll come back to it later, but one of the mitzvot of Pesach night is the four cups of wine, right? One of the reasons for four cups of wine is because when God told Moses to go and redeem the Jewish people from Egypt, he told him four expressions of redemption. I will take you out, I will save you, I will redeem you, and I will take you as a nation, right? And if you examine those four expressions, you'll see that three out of the four expressions is more about what he's going to take them out from more than what they're going to become. In other words, the first three expressions is, I'll take you out of Egypt, I'll redeem you from Egypt, I'll take you out of Egypt, right? In other words, all about running away from Egypt, and then only the fourth one he says, and then you'll become my nation. So it's interesting that the three of the four expressions is about letting go of the past. Only the fourth one is becoming something new. Which of course is the purpose. The purpose is not just to let go. The purpose is to become something different, right? But you can't become something different as long as you have a connection to the negative past or the negative ego, right? Particularly when it comes to Pesach. You see, growth is something we do all year round, hopefully, but Pesach is about a quantum leap type of growth. So I'll just share with you in this context. What does the word Pesach mean? You know? Yeah, Passover. Why is it called Passover? Because God jumped over the houses, right? When he killed the firstborns, he skipped over the houses of the Jewish people when he put the blood of the Korban Pesach, Paschal Lamb, and so on. Incidentally, do you know that in the Torah it's not called Pesach? Did you know that?
No.
So that's what I promise you, I'm going to give you some just interesting facts as well as personal growth lessons, but it's a very famous thing. It's a very interesting thing. The word Pesach comes from a different thing altogether. It comes from the lamb that was brought before Pesach as the sacrifice, called the sacrifice of Pesach. Paschal Lamb, yeah. But actually, this festival is not called Pesach. We call it Pesach. What does God call it? Chag HaMatzot. Right? Now, the question is, I'm just digressing now, but it's a very nice idea. The question is, why do we call it Pesach and he calls it Chag HaMatzot? So it goes like this. Because the relationship between God and the Jewish people is, God praises us and we praise him. He loves us and we love him. So when it comes to the Torah, the word matzah comes from, because when we left Egypt, we left to an unknown destination. We didn't know where we were going. We didn't know what we were going to have to eat. And God rushed us out of Egypt. He said, you got to leave now. Right? So what happened? The Jews break bread, but didn't have time to rise. So it was matzah, right? So the word matzah is actually a testimony to the faith of the Jewish people that they were ready to do this. They were ready to follow blindly almost. They were ready to follow Moses into a wilderness that they didn't know where they were going. And chop a bit of dough quickly and make a matzah and leave. Right? That's why God calls it Chag HaMatzot, to compliment the Jewish people, so to speak, for doing that. But we, in turn, don't do that. We don't credit ourselves. We call it Pesach, because we thank God for jumping over the houses and for saving us. So Pesach is the compliment to God. Chag HaMatzot is a compliment to the Jewish people. So we call it Pesach, and he calls it Chag HaMatzot. Right? Interesting. Okay. So this is the concept of actually letting go. Now, in order to understand this, let's understand the contrast. So we let go of the chametz, but instead we eat matzah, right? Because it's not about just letting go of the ego, it's about embracing the concept of surrender, of humility. So let's talk about matzah. Okay. Crash course here. We've done some of this before, but I'm going to show it to you even deeper. Matzah is the most beautiful thing. So matzah represents, the concept of matzah doesn't rise, right? Now, the idea of matzah is that it's made out of the same stuff as chametz. You realize, right? Exactly. In fact, you can only make matzah out of the same thing you make chametz of, right? It's just that, in other words, it's the same human being, right? Spiritually speaking. It's a human being who potentially has an ego, but we let go of the ego. And we eat matzah. Matzah means it doesn't rise. So matzah is the ultimate symbol of humility, of surrender, right? The great philosopher, the Maharal of Prague, says something very fascinating. Because, you know, we eat matzah to remember the time the Jews left Egypt, right? Now, we know at the Seder, there are certain symbols of freedom, like matzah and wine. Then there are certain symbols where we remember the bad times, like eating the bitter herbs, right? The maror. So matzah is one of the symbols of freedom. So the Maharal of Prague, the great philosopher, asks the question, and he says, but that's really strange, because if you look in the Torah, it calls matzah poor man's bread. Lechem oni, bread of affliction, poor man's bread, right? Bread of poverty. Because it's very plain. In fact, you're not allowed to add flavor to the matzah. It's got to be flour and water, right? That's all it's supposed to be. Nothing there. No ingredients. Egg matzah is no good for the Seder, right? Ashkenazim don't eat egg matzah. Whole Pesach, but that's a separate halachic discussion. But for the Seder, it's definitely not okay, right? Because you're supposed to have tamitzah to eat matzah. It's got to be just plain matzah, just wheat and just flour and water. Should be shmurim matzah, by the way. Good time to remind everyone, if they don't have shmurim matzah, let me know. I'll arrange you for the Seder. But he says that's really strange. So why is it called poor man's bread if it's supposed to be a symbol of freedom? So the Maharal of Prague develops this amazing concept, a concept of positive poverty. What does positive poverty mean? Poverty is normally a negative thing, right? But positive poverty means, in our personality, that the first step to grow, when we're stuck with ourselves, when we're stuck in our own ego, we can't move. In order to move, we've got to undress ourselves, we've got to strip ourselves of self completely. Now, we have to replace that later with a sense of good self, healthy self.
But you can't get to egocentric self, to good self, unless you pause in the middle, unless you actually embrace, unless you completely strip yourself of everything that's you. And that's what matzah is, right? Now, just take it a little bit further. So we know matzah and chametz are made out of the same stuff, as we said, right? Not only is it made out of the same stuff, but it's very much the same letters. I don't know if you realize that, right? So I'm going to show you something amazing. The two letters that are the same in matzah and chametz is mem and tzaddik. Okay, now, just a little crash course on the mysticism of Hebrew letters. So we know that letters mean all kinds of different things. One of the systems we have in studying the letters of Hebrew is a concept called atbash. Atbash means, at means aleph, taf, beis, bash is beis and shin. What does that mean? It means we say that the first letter is interchangeable with the last letter. So aleph and taf can be interchangeable, right? With me? No. So we have an order of the letters. So the alphabet goes aleph, bet, gimel, dalet, right? Until the letter taf, which is the last letter. So we have this concept that on either side, they're interchangeable. So aleph is the first letter. Taf is the last letter. They can interchange. Right? So in an aleph, it's also hinted at taf. In a taf, it's also hinted at aleph. That's how it works, right? Second letter, bet, is interchangeable with the second to last letter, shin. So bet and shin are interchangeable. Now, that's right. There you are. Modern application. Yeah. Okay. And so on. Now, the letters mem and tzaddik, if you use the system of atbash, then tzaddik, sorry, mem is interchangeable with the yud. And tzaddik with a hey. Who knows what's yud and hey? God's name. Right. So, but yud and hey and itself can be Hashem also, right? Just yud and hey. The full name is yud and hey and vav and hey, but the yud and hey is also right. Like halalukah, yeah. We say at the end of yeah. So, by the way, that's also the word mitzvah. You realize, right? Mitzvah is mem tzaddik vav hey. Mem tzaddik is yud and hey through the system of atbash. So, if every mitzvah is actually the full name of God, yud and hey, vav and hey. Right? Yeah, it's pretty interesting stuff, this. Right? But so Mem and Tzaddik is God's name, or at least hinted God's name, right? Because Mem and Tzaddik are interchangeable with the letters Yud and Hey. Which now begs the question, right? Because in Matzah, we get God's name. But we're talking about Pesach now, right? And Pesach, Chametz is supposed to be so terrible. It's a real prohibition to eat Chametz on Pesach. Right, not just about eating matzah, it's about not eating chametz, right? Not engaging with the ego. So how does God's name fall into chametz then, right? Same letters. Is everyone with me?
Yes.
Yeah? So the answer is like this. The answer is the difference between the chet and the hey, those ones in red. Okay, chet and hey are fundamentally different. We'll soon see. And not only the difference between chet and hey, it's where they are. Ah. So chet represents ego. And the difference between a chet and a hey is a tiny bit, right? It's just this little bit here. You take a little bit, right? If you create a small opening in the chet, you get to hey. So first of all, it represents a couple of things. Number one, even a little bit of ego is very destructive, right? That's why matzah is not allowed to rise even a drop. That is complete surrender. No ego. Let's get rid of the ego, at least on Pesach, right? That's what it symbolizes. Because that little bit of ego is in the chet, is hinted in the chet, where is the chet in the chametz? It's in the beginning. In other words, it represents, I put myself before God. Right? That's why it's chametz. So yes, Mem and Tzaddik represents God's name, but Chet comes first. You put yourself in front. If you live your life where you're the center, or I'm the center, that's Chametz. It could be, you could say, I do stuff for God too, but then that's not really God. Whereas the Hey is I put Mem Tzaddik first. Matzah, I put Mem Tzaddik first. God comes first. And therefore I'm able to surrender to Him and be in His hands. Now, what's the significance of that little of a little space. So the Talmud says like this: both chet and hey actually have an aspect to them that represent real failure. Why? Because both have a empty bottom, you see? Right?
Yeah.
Which represents falling out. Right? But what's the difference between the chet and the hay? The chet is someone that's egocentric. When they mess up, too bad. No point of return. They're so trapped in themselves, they can't come back. They can't admit I made a mistake. See, humility doesn't mean that I'm always connected to God and I never do anything wrong. That's not a human being. That's an angel. Right? We know that. We've talked about that many times. Human beings fail. We fail. That's part of the journey. But there's a huge difference when we fail with humility or we fail with ego.
Is a narcissist?
Well, maybe. It's not as bad as a narcissist. Even a little bit of ego could be problematic. Not just narcissism, right? So chet is the person who won't either they won't acknowledge that they failed, or if they do fail, they say, too bad. They'll never apologize. They'll never make amends. They'll never reconnect. They'll never try to rebuild a relationship. They'll never, right? That's it. Because I am who I am. So if I fall through the bottom, too bad. Right? The hey is humility. The hey, I can also fall. But I know where to creep in back. I know how to come back in. There's a window of coming back in. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, I just learned this part, only I just learned yesterday. Lubavitcher Rebbe points out, I always do this idea, but then he points out a very interesting thing. He says, in order to make a chet a hay, you don't need a big space, a tiny space. Right? Because when we grow and we go beyond ourselves and we fix mistakes, we just need to go beyond ourselves a little bit. That's the sign of humility. To push ourselves a little bit. Not huge things, just to grow a little bit. That's what Yitziat Mitzrayim means. Going out of Mitzrayim means we go out of ourselves just a little bit. Right? And he links it with the Midrash. That Midrash says, when it comes to the concept of tshuva and reconnecting to God and so on, God says, I help you, but you have to want to let me in. And it's a beautiful Midrash that says, that God says to the Jewish people, he tells them, pitchuli. Beautiful Medrash. He says, open for me an opening as tiny as the tip of a needle. And I will open for you a door that is as huge as a hallway. Right? But you have to start. You have to make that little door. It can be tiny. But that little door is tiny, but it shows that you're humble. It shows that you're not trapped in yourself. It shows you ready to start the journey of creeping back in. It's a beautiful idea. Yeah, make sense?
Yes.
So that's the difference between Chametz and Matzah. So the first part of Pesach, therefore, is we've got to start, number one, acknowledging the ego. We have to acknowledge that we're trapped sometimes. Sometimes we have to acknowledge that we're in Egypt, our own personal Egypt. We're trapped in Egypt. The word Mitzrayim, as we've talked about many times, means Metzah, means narrowness. That we're trapped in we're constricted in our own self. And we have to be ready to begin. We have to be ready to eat the matzah on Pesach. But we only eat the matzah on Pesach. You can't have it both ways. So therefore, we start acknowledging the chametz before Pesach. We start getting rid of it. We start selling it. Whatever we do before Pesach, searching it for the night before, whatever the mitzvot are, and then we're ready to sit down to the Seder and embrace full freedom. Embracing full freedom means to embrace humility, to embrace selflessness, to embrace what the Maharal Prabhupada calls positive poverty, which in other words, to strip ourselves, to surrender. Now, surrendering doesn't mean I lose self completely. It does mean momentarily, because as I said before, we can only embrace a good, positive self if we let go of the, it's like a seed, right? When you plant a seed in a tree to grow a tree, we know that that's what happens. How does the seed become a tree? It actually disintegrates first. It becomes nothing. When it becomes nothing, then you can replace that with a completely different reality, right? It can be a tree. The same thing with us. We have the Omer period that goes after, like we don't eat matzah all year round. We actually do eat chametz afterwards. In fact, chametz becomes a mitzvah. We eat challah on Shabbos. Right? In the temple times, there was a sacrifice that was brought in Shavuot, which was a mitzvah to be chametz. It had to be chametz. It had to rise, which is kind of funny. I mean, all of a sudden, Pesach is a terrible thing. 6 weeks later, it's a great thing. I mean, what's going on? The answer is because God created us with a self. He created us with our own talents, with our own competencies, with our own strengths, with our own contributions, our own uniqueness, and so on and so forth, there's a tremendous amount to say about self. But not when it's connected to ego. So what's the process? The process is matzah. We get rid of our ego completely. Positive poverty. We have nothing. Nothingness. No taste. Nothingness. Doesn't rise. Nothing. Then we start a period of self-development, which is the Omer, after Pesach, until we reach up to Shavuot, where we reintroduce the self, but in the context of connection to something higher. In the context of growth, in the context of humility, in the context of being ready to go beyond ourselves. That's how the formula works. Make sense? Okay. Now, how do we do all this? And that's the foundation of freedom. That's how we become free, by letting go of ourselves a little bit. Right? How do we do that? So we come to the Seder night, and we have the Seder plate. And I want to spend some time giving a bit of depth to the Seder plate, right? So you understand the Seder plate. So the first thing we do is we have three matzot. Why do we have three matzot? Many, many reasons. Anyone know the reasons why three? No, you don't have to do it all. No. The point was that you're actually very intelligent. Just didn't do maybe enough learning until now. But you did.
Is that for the Afikoman?
Yeah, it's got to do with Afikoman, but I'll tell you. So it's actually very interesting. Because things happen in Judaism, things that, again, there's just interesting stuff so you can learn this. But things happen in Judaism on many levels. So very often we do things that have very big spiritual significance, but they actually start off from a halachic reason. And the halachic reason works like this, very simple. Why we have three matzahs. There's a very simple halachic reason which people often don't know. And that's the origin of three matzahs, in fact. So every Friday night and festival, when we make kiddush, we have how many chalas? We have two, right?
Two.
And those two are supposed to be two complete chalas, yeah. Right? That's the idea, two complete chalas. Why? Two, sorry?
We know that.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
It's repeated often.
Right, you have two chalas. Well, for every reason, many reasons why it's two, but yeah, that's two chalas, okay.
Why don't we have 3 days?
When? On Friday night?
Wow, 3 months.
No, I'm going to get there. One second. So every Shabbat and every festival, we have two. That's got to do with the man, because the manna in the desert is a fallen Shabbat, all festivals, therefore it fell a double portion the day before, so it's got to do with a lot of things. Okay. So the halacha is supposed to have two complete chalas, or two complete matzahs for that matter. On Pesach night, we have an additional concept, and that is that we have to have a broken piece of matzah on the table. That's why, part of the Seder is we break the middle matzah, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do we break matzahs? Not because we want to be destructive, but because it's the part of the same idea as humility, same idea of poverty, because matzah is called poor man's bread. A poor man never has a complete loaf. Again, tying it into the positive poverty idea, that it's we're not whole, we realize we're not whole, there's something much bigger, right, outside of us. That's why we have to break a matzah. And in fact, we're supposed to break the matzah quite early on in the Seder, right? We make kiddush, we wash hands, we eat a parsley or whatever, we eat vegetable, and then we break the matzah before we say the Haggadah, before we say the Manishtan even, right? Because when we tell the story, we're supposed to have a broken piece of matzah on the table. But it's Yontif, and Yontif is left to have two whole matzah. That's why you have three. To have two whole ones and one broken one, okay? That's the simple halachic reason, but there's many, many spiritual, mystical reasons that they all go together. So one of the ideas is because we have three patriarchs, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and we have four matriarchs. That's why we have three matzahs and four cups of wine. That's one of the reasons, right? There's a deeper idea in that also, but we'll get to that. But there's also, we know that Pesach was the time that the three angels came to Avraham to give him the news that Isaac will be born. And Avraham ran into Sarah and said, please make some ugot, cakes, which the Midrash says is actually matzahs. And he said to her, take three measures of flour and bake three matzot, essentially. So that's what happened on Pesach, so we have that. It's also got to do with that the Jewish nation is divided into three parts, Kohen, Levi, and Israel, right? So there are many, many reasons why three matzot. Okay. But also, mystically, and we're going to see this in a second, the three matzot represent the three layers of cognition, Chochmah, Bina, and Daat, which we've talked about many times. Right, that you know, good. Chochmah, Bina, Daat, okay? Now, why is this important? Because we're going to see that together with we have 10 powers of our soul, correct? We've said this many times. Now, the Seder is about freedom, but freedom comes from a very core essence of our soul. Freedom comes from the ability to surrender and give up ourselves and to go beyond ourselves. That's what freedom is. But it needs to be then internalized. It's not good if it just lives at the depth of our soul. Freedom has to be expressed. The first place where freedom gets expressed is in our mind. Remember Edith Eger, right? That was the foundation of her freedom. She says that her mother told her before she left to the camps that they can take everything away from you, but they cannot take away from you what's in your mind, right? In other words, Viktor Frankl talked about that as well. He said in his mind he was free, even though physically he wasn't free. So freedom begins in our mind. We have to think about it. Giving up ego on an emotional level is very difficult, but the first place it has to happen is in our head, right? Just realizing that we're not the center of everything, realizing that there's much more beyond us, realizing that there's infinity beyond our finite, fragile self, right? All that kind of stuff. Where does it begin? It begins in the mind. And if it begins in the mind, it's got to be properly comprehended. And how does it comprehend it? It's got to go through the three stages of cognition, which is Chochma, Bina, and Daat. Right? Because then, what does that go together with? It goes together with the Seder plate. Now, there's many ways to lay out the Seder plate. So, to give you a little bit of an insight here, how many things are on the Seder plate? Six, right? Three matzahs, and then the plate itself. Sorry?
Three and six, double.
No, no, no. Three and six is nine, plus the plate is ten, which represent the 10 powers of our soul. I'm going to show you how in a second. Right, but that's Kabbalistically how the Seder runs, that we have 10 things because we're going to try and experience freedom on the Pesach night, and the idea is to try and then bring and implement the freedom on all levels of who we are, of human experience, which is not just the three layers of cognition, but then it has to travel into emotion and be implemented in action. Right. So how does that work? So there's different ways to lay out the Seder table. The one at the picture I've got here is the way the Arizal said it should be laid out. And I'm going to go through it with you and explain each thing and then explain how it corresponds to the first six emotions, right? So on the right top corner there, it's three triangles. You see that? It's not such a good picture. So those two on top, right hand and left one, and then this in the middle, right? And then again, the same thing. So on the top right hand corner is the Shankbon, the Zra, right? Left top corner is the egg. Yeah. Then in the middle you have either lettuce or ochrein. Something that fits into the concept of the bitter herbs, which is eaten later at the Seder, right? Then the next triangle, the right hand side is charoset, right? Which is for Ashkenazim it's apples and nuts and stuff like that. Sfarim, it's dates and I don't know, something else, whatever, but it's the idea of a cement type of thing, right? On the other side is the karpas, which is, over here it's an onion, but it doesn't have to be an onion, it can be a potato or parsley or whatever the case is, right? Yes. And then the bottom is again another portion of either lettuce or grain, which we then eat later on as a sandwich with the matzah, right? Okay, now let me just run through what each one here represents very quickly. And then I'm going to show you how it works mystically in terms of the layers of our human experience, right? Because it's very deep. Yeah.
What's the one on the left?
This one? It
looks like an onion.
Yeah, it's a vegetable. So, a karpas. So, it's either an onion. Awesome. This comes from a Chabad website, and the Chabad eat onion as the vegetable. But other people eat potato,
parsley,
some people eat, right? It has to be a vegetable. That's the idea. And that vegetable gets dipped into salt water. So we'll talk about that. Let me just run through each one so you actually get a bit of an insight on what they all mean, right? So the shank bone is there to remember the paschal lamb, right? And by the way, it doesn't have to be a shank bone from a lamb. It could be, in fact, something that I'm accustomed to have other things. For example, in Chabad, we have a chicken neck. Whatever, it's a piece of bone and meat, essentially, and it's roasted. It's all to remember how they used to bring the Korban Pesach, the Paschal lamb in the time of the temple, right?
Can you eat
wrong? No, it's supposed to be real.
You
don't eat meat?
No. Anyway.
I can send you a piece if you want. I have a neighbor who's a vegetarian. I give him every year, I give him this raw. Anyway, okay. On the left hand corner is a roasted egg. Now, the roasted egg is just another cooked item to remember. There's two reasons why I have an egg. To remember the second sacrifice. There was at the time of the temple, there was another sacrifice that used to eat by the Seder called a festival sacrifice, a Korban Chagiga. It was one brought on because of the festival, which was eaten before the Paschal lamb, and that's why we have the egg. Now, why do we choose an egg specifically?
Because
So there's two reasons. One is that egg is actually a symbol of mourning. Which is interesting. Why is that at the Seder? So there is a bit of a theme at the Seder that there's a tinge of sadness at the Seder that we don't have a complete Seder because we don't have a temple and we don't have the sacrifice, we don't have the Korban Pesach and so on and so forth. Okay, that's one idea. But I think I want to share with you another beautiful, beautiful idea of why the egg. You know that, I'm saying it to some of you because I know in South Africa the egg was like a big deal in the Seder, right? Now, by the way, it's not such a big deal. It's a custom. I mean, all customs are big deals. But we should just make sure we place a bit more emphasis on eating the matzah than the egg, because the matzah is the real mitzvah. I know South Africans eat cut it up, put it in salt water, it's like a whole big deal, right? Nice. Okay, so why is such a focus on an egg? So there was a Hasidic Rebbe, who happened to be a descendant of, actually, called the Ishbitzer Rebbe. He has some fascinating insights. He has a Haggadah with commentary also, which I got a few years ago, and I learned some of the stuff. So he says the following. An egg is a very unique, and it's got to do with the whole process of coming out of Egypt and personal freedom. An egg is a very interesting food. Because an egg in its own is a ready-to-eat food, right? You can make an egg, you can fry an egg, you can have a hobbled egg, right? On the other hand, by definition, an egg is actually something which symbolizes that it's actually not ready yet. What is an egg, essentially? It's to hatch into a chicken, right? So on the one hand, it's a perfect thing as is, and yet it's something that represents is actually incomplete. There's still a way to go, really, right? He says that's the whole idea of coming out of Egypt. And he says it in a bit of different context, but let me explain to you how it applies to the personal freedom journey, right? Because we have this idea that every year we keep Pesach. Now, how many times can you go out of Egypt, right? And the answer is all the time, because today's redemption is tomorrow's Egypt, right? The idea is always to grow. So grow means we grow a little bit more than we used to. We go out of our comfort zone. But when you go out of your comfort zone and you adopt a new practice and a new way of living, after a while, that becomes your comfort zone. And then you've got to go out of Egypt again. Because that's the purpose of the human being. As long as we're alive, as long as we're around, we have to keep. And that's why, by the way, at the Seder, we actually say this. We say, Bechol Dor Vador, which I know is used as an expression for lots of different things, but in the Seder it says, every generation we need to see ourselves as if we are going out of Egypt ourselves. What that means spiritually is, it's not only Bechol Dor Vador, it's Bechol every year, really, every day. Right? We're always continuously growing. We always grow. Now, when we grow, that stage, that step, it's like an egg. It's complete. It's beautiful. It can be celebrated. It can be eaten, fried, boiled, whatever. But we know that it is perfect now. But it still has to grow into a chicken. In other words, it has to keep going. So, you follow? In other words, that's the idea. So that's very symbolic of the purpose of the Seder and the purpose of Pesach in general. Okay.
I thought it was fertility.
An egg? Yeah, maybe. But I don't know if that's connected to the Seder necessarily, but maybe. Yeah, next day, yeah, also. Many, many, many layers, many, many meanings. Okay.
Do you have to burn the egg?
Some people do, there's a custom, you don't have to. We don't, for example. We just boil the egg. Yeah, this is why, but I'll tell you why. Because some people have that custom. Yeah, the shank bone you're supposed to, not burn, you're supposed to roast. Okay. Roast means like you put it in, like on top of the stove or something, with no water, just it should.
Just flame.
Some people have a custom, I actually do it on a proper, like, barbecue thing, But it doesn't have to be. It can be on a stove also, but it should be like roasted, but not pot roasted, but with liquid. It should be roasted like the Paschal lamb was. Mm-hmm. So some people say the egg also sort of should be because that second sacrifice was also roasted in temple times. That's why like they burn the egg a bit, but you don't have to. Most people don't. So I just saved your job.
But it's interesting that the non-Jew and the egg thing is
Easter.
They have lots of things they took from us.
I don't know
what thing. Yeah, but we insist in everything plain, you see.
Yeah.
I guess so.
Yeah. And the Greeks also. The Greek is the egg. It's
oh, really?
Life.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so that's the shank bone and the egg. Now, we also have the mitzvah on Pesach night to eat maror, right? Maror is a bit of herbs. The idea of that, of course, as we know, that we remember the bitter times. That's because part of the appreciation, part of the praise, part of the gratitude is not to forget where we came from, and therefore we need to remember where we were. There are lots of other symbolisms we'll get to maybe in the next week, but that's why we eat maror. And we put two of them on the Seder plate because one is to eat maror on its own and one is to put it in a matzah sandwich, right? Then we have the charoset. The charoset is It's lots of things. It's like a cementy sort of thing, which is to remind us of the mortar and the cement that was in Egypt, but it also is made out of ingredients that represent the strength of the Jewish people, because we Jewish people are compared to dates, compared to apples for various reasons and so on, and that's where we have the charoset. Now, what we do is we dip the maror into the charoset, which is interesting, because we eat maror to remember the bitter times, right? But at the same time, we dip it in something sweet. Now, by the way, you're not supposed to drown it in the charoset. You're supposed to dip it a little bit. Afterwards, you can eat the charoset or a matzah and do whatever you want with it. But you're supposed to dip it a little. Why? So there's an interesting idea. There are many ideas. One of the ideas is, it's also a reminder to us that when we go through times of challenge, which we do sometimes, there's always, we have to also try and identify the moments of sweetness, even in the challenges. And the Jewish people had that. They were able to give birth, they had big families, they raised a nation. So there was sweetness, even in the challenge, and therefore that's one of the ideas of dipping the maror into the charoset. And then we have the vegetable. So what's the vegetable? The vegetable is... Excuse me. Okay. The vegetable is a very interesting thing. There's a custom on Pesach night that we eat a vegetable to... Wait, 1 second. Sorry about that. All right. So after we make Kiddush, we wash hands, or at least one person washes hands, and then we dip a vegetable in salt water. Now, what's the reason for that? Anyone knows?
Tea,
that's true. But again, actually it starts with a sort of a more halachic legal reason. And the reason is that we do things on Pesach night to arouse curiosity. Because one of the myths, the context of Pesach night is communicating the story to the next generation, right? That's Adi Manishtan and so on. So you want to do things that are different so that the children ask questions. They get, like, that's symbolic of why you're doing it different, to arouse the spirit of exploration, right? So when we make Kiddush on Friday night, what's the next thing we do? We wash and eat bread. So Saturday night, we should wash and eat matzah. We don't. What do we do? Before the meal, we have a bit of vegetable. So the child wants to know, what's this all about, right? But we do also have the idea of tears. That's the idea of salt water. And I once saw an idea about a vegetable. And this is the power of the Seder night. The vegetable is in the ground, right?
Yep.
Different to a tree that grows, but a vegetable is normally stuck in the ground. Pesach night is a very special energy that if someone wants to grow and someone wants to achieve connection on Pesach night, we are taught that doesn't even need that much. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter where you think you are. It doesn't matter how much you failed. Pesach night gives, just like in the times of Egypt, we know the Jewish people had sunken into the very deep levels of impurity, it says, right? And God came and just whisked them out. So to every year of Pesach, God gives us a gift on Pesach night, if we just tap into it. He gives us a gift of freedom, and he gives us that energy to be able to make that commitment to grow and to become free internally. No matter where we think we are, no matter how stuck we think we are, Pesach night, we can do it. And that's the idea behind the vegetable. Vegetable grows in the ground. So even if you think we're stuck in the ground, Pesach night, the vegetable becomes a very important piece of food. It becomes on the Seder plate. So it shows you, it doesn't matter who you are, you can become part of the Seder experience. Okay, so that's a little bit about each. I mean, there's lots more, of course, but that's a little bit about each item on the Seder plate. Now, apart from all that, the Seder plate represents the first six emotions that we have. I'm going to show you how. So we know that we have three levels of cognition, chacham and adat, right? And then we've done this many times. We go through the six emotions. Six emotions go also in two triangles. We have chesed on the right, gevura on the left, tiferet, and then we have the three supportive ones, which we've talked about before. I'll go through them quickly now as well: netzach, hod, and yesod. I should have put it up on the thing. I'm sorry, I didn't. I forgot to do that. Now, what is it? So chesed is on the right. Chesed always represents giving, connecting, loving, expansion, flexibility, all those things come into the idea of chesed, right? Now, we know, as we've talked about many times, there's good chesed, bad chesed, there's chesed with ego, chesed without ego, and, right, selfish chesed, selfless chesed, human chesed, godly chesed, there's different, okay. So, we have to achieve freedom in all these things. So, that's the zroah. The zroah is the top right. Zroah means, the word zroah, which we translate as a shankbon, is an arm. It's a giving thing, right? It's like God, he redeemed us with an outstretched arm, it says, right? That's why it represents the concept of chesed. Right? Chesed. The left top corner is an egg. An egg is gevura. What's gevura?
Strength.
Strength, but also we define gevura many times as Chesed is giving, but gvura is discipline. It's the idea of holding back. It can be bad gvura also. It can be aggression where you reject someone or you don't give, etc. But that's part. Or it could be good, like discipline and self control and so on, right? So that's an egg. Because anything round is like gvura. Round meaning it's self contained. It doesn't go outwards. It's moves inwards, right? So a circle is a concept of gvura because it holds everything inside. There's no opening to go. So that's the idea of gvura, right? So that's the egg. The egg is gvura. The lettuce in the middle is tiferet. Now you remember tiferet is a combination of chesed and gvura. It's like synthesizing chesed and gvura together. So what's amazing is like this. We eat the lettuce because it's bitter herbs, but in fact, there's different ingredients you can have for maror. You can have horseradish, which is strong, but the main one is actually lettuce. It's not really, it's cost lettuce, actually, we're supposed to have, right? Well, they call America romaine lettuce, but the one we have here is cost lettuce, right? Now, cost lettuce actually is not that bitter, if you realize. It's bitter at the root, but the leaves actually have a kind of sweetness to them, right? So it's a combination between bitterness and sweetness, which is the idea of tiferet, combining the chesed and the gevura, right? Then we go to the lower three. The lower three is netzach, hod, and yesod. Netzach and yesod means netzach is the idea of ambition, strength, overcoming difficulties, overcoming obstacles. That's what's on the right side, the same size, the same thing as chesed, right? Because chesed is made out of things, it's made out of fruit. Fruit grows from a tree. A tree represents strength, ambition, overcoming obstacles. That's netzach, right? The left-hand corner, left the bottom triangle, is the vegetable. That's the opposite. That's hod. Hod is humility. Because you've got to balance ambition with humility, otherwise it doesn't work. And that's why the vegetable is crossed on the ground. That's a symbol of humility. And then you have the third one, which is the sixth of the six emotions, which is called yesod. Yesod means connection. I'm ready to connect to other people and to express these emotions. Because these emotions are all within ourselves. What's what we feel. But then you have to make a connection, right? You have to make a connection to the outside world. And that's, again, that takes a combination of chesed and gevurah, of netzach and hod. And that's why it's, again, the lettuce which represents the middle, which is combining everything and the ability then to connect it and connect to something else. So those are the six, right? So we have the three levels of intellectual, which is the three matzahs. By the way, which is the one you break? Middle one, because that's gevurah. Because gevurah needs extra control. Gevurah can very easily derail it. They can all derail, but gevurah is, right? So it's like bina also bina. Why do you break it? Because we talk about it in the layers of intellect. So chachma is the conception of an idea. Bina is when you break up the idea into many, many parts. So that's also the idea of breaking the middle matzah. That's the idea of breaking it into understanding from different angles and so on. Okay, that's just by the way. So we have the three levels of intellect, then we have the six emotions. And then what happens is, you know, there's 10 powers of the soul, right? And the 10th one is represented by the plate itself. The Seder plate, the physical plate. Why? You remember when we discussed the 10 powers of the soul, that the 10th one is called Malchut. Right? Leadership. What does that mean? Malchut is not an emotion on its own. But it's like the feminine power of our emotions, which is, it absorbs all the other emotions and gives birth to it. Right? What does that mean? So many times we can develop really, really good and pure ways of thinking. Chachma nedat. We can even go so far to develop healthy emotions. We can have love. We can have discipline. We can feel the need to discipline. We can feel the need to love, to give. Very often, however, it doesn't happen. You know, people are good, full of good feelings. They really are so worried about someone else and really want to, I don't know, love God, love other people. They're really ambitious. They feel ambitious. But it doesn't happen. It's not implemented. Right? What's the difference between a leader and an academic? They might be both as smart. Right? But the academic, it's all left in the world of intellect. It's not actually implemented. Right? A leader is someone who can take... A leader also has to have a good chokhmah, a good bina. A leader wants to run a country. He's got to have intelligence, got to have good emotional health and so on. But what makes a personal leader is the malchut. That's why it's called leadership. Because malchut means that it absorbs all of that and is able to follow it through, is able to give birth to it. Right? And maybe that's why the actual plate is the most important part of the whole journey, because it's all very good to be free in our mind. It's very special to be free in our emotions, because that means we're really becoming part of who we are. But it doesn't mean that's going to happen. It doesn't mean we're going to put it into practice. Right? Because after the Seder night, when we decide to make the commitment to grow, we might even be very, very enthusiastic about it and very excited about it. On an emotional level, we might feel completely free. And then the day after, someone insults us and we get all upset. So we haven't put it into practice, right? We have to be able to go beyond ourselves a little bit. Or we have good intentions of doing something good, doing another mitzvah, whatever the case is, and we're just not going to make it happen. But that's why freedom on all levels means we also put everything into a plate, a Seder plate. Plate is like that malchut that absorbs it and then makes it happen. Right? Internalize all. That's the concept of the, that's the mystical significance of the Seder plate. The three matzahs, the six items, which are the six emotions, and then the plate itself, which is the idea of malchut. Now all this is really, really important and very connected. I'll just finish with this. Very connected to the concept of a Yetziat Mitzrayim, going out of Mitzrayim. Because what is Mitzrayim? Mitzrayim is narrowness, constrictness, right? We're in our own prison, we don't think. Now, in Kabbalah, it talks about another type of Mitzrayim. It says that Mitzrayim refers to the, what we call in Kabbalah, the Meitzar, we did this once, the Meitzar HaGaron, the narrowness of the throat. Did I show you the idea? Remember that idea, narrowness of the throat? What is that? Yeah, but it's our physical body represents a spiritual journey. That's how it works, right? So no, the head is the intellect. So intellect is something that's not hard. It's not hard to become free in our mind. I mean, it is, but it's not. It's possible. It's attainable. It's very easy. You learn, you study, you think, you reflect, you're honest enough, so you, right? But cognitive dissonance is very common, right? So we understand things, but we don't put them into practice. We learn about how bad it is to become angry, we become angry. We learn it, whatever, right? All that kind of stuff. We can learn how it's not good to be jealous, but we're still jealous. What happens? Because what happens is that, and that's, I'm just telling you, because it's got to do with the word of Mitzrayim. What happens is that we learn about it, we understand it, which is already a great step, but we're still in Mitzrayim, because we learn in Kabbalah that for cognition to become emotional is a very difficult step. That's why physically there's a very narrow path between. There's a throat. Kabbalah calls it the narrowness of the throat. And often it gets stuck there. It doesn't come down to the heart, which is the seat of emotion. Why? Because emotions and ideas are totally different. They're very different. Ideas are objective. They come from the outside. And process. They're very detached. Emotions is me. It's my personality. So for something detached, which I have in my mind, which I can hold in my mind, it's not a problem, right? But to travel down and to be transformed and transition into emotions is a very, very difficult step. And sometimes it doesn't happen, it gets stuck in the throat, which is Mitzrayim. It gets the narrowness of the throat. One more point. Who is the king of Mitzrayim? Paro, right? In Hebrew, Hebrew words are always so amazing. If you take the letters of Paro, it makes Ha'oref. Oref is the neck. Same part of the body. Right? Because when are you in Mitzrayim? Even if you've been open to new ideas, and even if you've internalized those ideas in terms of cognitively, intellectually, you're not out of Mitzrayim. You might still be in the narrowness of the throat. You might still be in the narrow throat, which is Meitzar, the narrow part of the body, which is the throat, ruled by the neck, which is Paro. And Yitziat Mitzrayim means, going out of Egypt means that you're able to take it down, make it part of your personality, and then implement it, which is represented by the plate. Okay, so we put all the things in the Seder plate. We've gotten rid of the Chametz. Now we're ready for the Seder. And the Seder will go through next week. Okay, so next week we'll go through some. Good.